Let's go to one of Dean Richards' A-list interviews from 2016. This is with Hollywood legend Clint Eastwood, who had a very good year this year, including the direction of the very popular film Sully. And so here is Clint Eastwood talking about his film in 2016, Sully.
No, it's an interesting story to tell. I've done a lot of different movies, but never one quite this in this exact vein. So that made it interesting for me. And I think Sully is an interesting character, and it's an event that was very important to New York City, especially at that particular time, you know, 7 years ago, when it was post 9/11, and other series of incidents, including the economy sliding quite a bit, that made people gravitate towards this thing when it was just a news thing in the news. You know.
Yeah. What was it that you were trying to tell in the story that didn't make all the headlines? Because I think there are some really interesting things in this movie that people who think they know the story are going to find out they didn't really know the story.
Well, yeah, I felt that when I first read the script. I thought I knew the story, and then I realized I didn't. But that it wasn't as just a pushover for Captain Sullenberger, that he was accepted as a hero. He was accepted as a hero with the press and with the populace in New York, but there were... there were people, as with any accident, there's always somebody who's trying to uncover it and make sure everything was done properly. And the National Transportation Safety Board was very inquisitive. I think they and he finally had to prove himself there that his decision was the correct one.
What do you think that Tom Hanks brings to this? That other, you could have found 20 other, you know, pretty good actors to play this, but
Tom was my first suggestion, my first choice, and the first time I met Sully, I said, "What do you think of Tom Hanks playing you?" It turns out that Tom is the exact same age now as Sully was then, 7 years ago. Wow. And so everything pretty much fell in. The stars were kind of aligning, and but I think Tom captures his. They don't look exactly alike, but they have captures a lot of his mannerisms, yeah, et cetera.
And that sort of sense of decency and truth, and you know, like the, yeah, all these things that we know and love Tom Hanks for.
Right. Yeah. Well, he does that, and Sully is that, and so that's yeah, that's kind of why they're. Yeah. It just. It was meant to be.
Seemed right. You know what else was great as I'm sitting down here? Here's Clint Eastwood, one of the most legendary actors and directors of all time, singing the Chicago Blues for me to make me feel at home when I
yeah,
walk into the room. I appreciate
it. A man's got to know his limitations, so I'm not going to be singing too much longer.
You like Chicago, though, is it?
Yeah, I like Chicago.
You enjoy it.
I've been there many times. I went there. I think the first time I went there, I went there to be interviewed by Roger Ebert, and this was back when we were both very young. It's quite a few years ago, and I wasn't directing at that time. I was just an actor, but I just directed my first film, Play Misty for Me, and Roger liked it. So anyway, we're doing a thing, and we ended up drinking too much beer in an Irish saloon there, and. But it was very enjoyable and to get to know Chicago.
Clint Eastwood, Academy Award winner and director of the hit film Sully. We will see probably in a couple of weeks how that film does in terms of Academy Award nominations. There was a lot of initial buzz for Sully and especially for Tom Hanks. And then in recent weeks, I haven't seen... In some of the Golden Globes and things like that, I haven't seen Tom Hanks' name in that film as prominent as many expected. So we'll see how the Oscars feel about it. But I'll tell you, you know, what I found, I didn't see the movie, but I did see a few of the trailers and the coming attractions. And, you know, Sully was so, you know, became such a hero in the media that I never knew that whole backstory that he had to really defend himself as to his decision to land that plane in the water. We all assumed that he was a hero and that this was exactly the right thing to do, and perhaps it still was, but I had no idea of the backstory that that Sully had to really defend his decision. Funny thing is, about when that was right in the middle of that happening, soon afterward, I was in the Denver airport, and I was waiting for a layover, and I turned around, and there was Sully sitting in the gate, just like a regular person. And he was tall, and he certainly struck a an imposing figure there. So certainly, I think this guy knows what he's doing. But Tom Hanks and Clint Eastwood got together for a big hit film in 2016 called Sully, and that was one of Dean Richards' A-list interviews of this past year. That, of course, is the sound of the Dick Van Dyke Show. And that's the sound of that little blink is the sound of Dick Van Dyke tripping over the ottoman. The classic opening of the Dick Van Dyke Show. One of the great, great TV shows of all time. And in fact, in a neat little twist, in December, they brought back, CBS brought back the Dick Van Dyke Show in prime time. They colorized two famous episodes, one where Rob thinks that he and Laura have the wrong baby, which is a classic episode, which it turns out the great joke at the end is that Rob thinks that they got a wrong baby because there's so much craziness at the hospital. And then it turns out that the couple they think they've got the wrong baby with is African-American. Oops. One of the longest laughs in TV history. So this year, Dean was able to speak with TV legend Dick Van Dyke, and Dean has said this is one of his favorite interviews, A-list interviews of 2016. So we thought we would give it a little rerun here on Dean Richards' Show, and here's Dean and Dick.
Came from Danville, drove to Chicago, auditioned to be an announcer on WMAQ in Chicago.
And the hotel, I say, that didn't leave them the call. They didn't call me, and I missed the audition.
Drove all the way down there. That you didn't get your wake-up call and missed it.
Yeah.
Ruined your life.
Yeah, I would have been an announcer up in
the
end of the woods.
How about that? So what does it mean to you to be back here in Danville again?
Oh, God, it's just great. You know, I have a foundation, scholarships for kids who have talent. You know, most of the high schools around the country are losing art, music, drama, all that money's gone. We're raising a generation of robots because I do support a lot out there, but here we're going to keep it going, and we're going to give scholarships to kids who've got talent, and there's a lot of them.
All through the Dick Van Dyke Foundation.
Through the Van Dyke Foundation, and that's my main reason to come here. They're refurbishing my childhood home, which I can't believe.
That's amazing. When you drive through town, does it look familiar to you? Does it look like a completely different place to you?
There are certain neighborhoods that are exactly the same. But a lot downtown areas, a lot of landmarks are gone that were there before. But I'll recognize my old high school here and the grade school. Everything's still there.
So what kind of a student was Dick Van Dyke here at good old Danville High?
I was a big man on campus. I was president of my class, vice president of the dramatic club, and didn't do very well in my studies. I didn't have time.
You're busy having fun.
Too social.
So you were involved in theatrical. You had the bug and kind of knew what you wanted to do
Then. I didn't, getting in show business was really over the rainbow. You never thought about it as a possibility. So I didn't really, but I was in all the shows. They wrote shows for teenagers back in those days. It were pretty, all propaganda. Release on Liberty and boring. And the only musicals we got to do were operettas. Huh. Kids today get to do hit shows Broadway.
They're doing Bye Bye Birdie and like.
I know. I've seen it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
We did, The Merry Wives of Windsor.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. So from when did you actually leave Danville?
1947.
47.
Me and my buddy Phil got in his old Chevy, drove all. We were going to do an act for a lark. It was going to be an experience, and then we were going to come home and do something serious. and one thing led to another. I never got home again.
Yeah, it got sidetracked away. You worked at a radio station here in Danville.
WDAN. Right. Everybody got drafted during the war, and I got the job at 17. Loved it. Just
that.
Loved it.
Was that sort of what that great Dick Van Dyke Show episode was based, where you did the DJ marathon?
That's right. Based on Danville, yeah. I mentioned Danville a lot in my show.
Yeah.
I went to England to do Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and there was some question about my English accent, which is a big joke in it. And he said, oh, you can just talk in your regular accent, but don't say you're from Danville.
Talking about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, how about this?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Is this amazing?
About it. Took him 4 years, and it's a beautiful thing.
How do you feel sitting in it, and what kind of memories does it bring back?
Oh, my God, great memories. Great memories. It was such fun shooting that movie. Oh, my God. But the kids, I need the kids in back.
Right.
You know, at one point, it rained so much in England, we weren't getting any shooting done. So we went to the south of France. We're driving through vineyards. Couldn't possibly be England. Nobody's ever brought that up.
Yeah. What, Disney and Walt Disney Company really was such a big part of your early part of your movie career.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Wasn't it?
I was a big fan from the time I was a kid. It was such a thrill to actually end up working with them.
From the cartoons, from Mickey Mouse? And,
my favorite was Pinocchio.
Pinocchio was
and
your favorite.
And Hi, Diddly-Dee, an Actor's Life for Me. I said, that's what I want.
Wow, it was your theme song.
Yeah. You know, the refurbishing Walt's home, childhood home in Chicago.
Right.
We're going up.
Where you'll
later.
Be on Sunday.
Yeah. I'm so tickled about this. But the whole thing is raising money for the foundation. I saw a performance of Bye Bye Birdie here. Couldn't believe the talent of those kids. And they've got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Nowhere to train.
That's great that you're making that opportunity available to them and giving them, you know, the kind of opportunity, because things have changed so much, haven't they, with electronics and YouTube and things like that. There's no place to get actual practical experience in front of human beings.
Oh, we're out in Los Angeles, I don't think there's one high school that has an art program, a dramatic program, anything of the kind. Those things are all gone for lack of money. We're raising a generation of robots, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
We've got to keep some culture going.
I wonder if you, reflect on what classics you've made. Not only Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, but Mary Poppins is still one of the biggest shows on Broadway. When it's on television, everybody stops what they're doing. It's appointment television to watch you and Julie Andrews.
You know, it was one of the few, usually when, excuse me, I'm making a movie, you're not knowing, you know, how it's going. Is it any good? Every day. We came in, we knew something very special was happening. There was just a magic about it. Every day when we came to work, we knew it was going to be something. It was a joy every minute.
Was it unlike any kind of other movie experience that you've done? Because for its day, the special effects were pretty amazing.
For their time?
Yeah.
I've often thought if computer graphics were around, Walt would be like a kid in a toy store. Wouldn't he have had... He missed all that.
Yeah. You must have been dancing and performing to what? I mean, with some of the scenes that you were doing that they later on put you in with the
with
special
the penguins,
effects, with the penguins and so forth. What were you actually seeing during that?
Nothing. I was with the animators, and fortunately, I love mime anyway.
Right.
They would tell me where they are, how tall they were, what moves to make. And I finally saw a penciled-in animation. I couldn't believe my eyes.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It turned out so great.
You heard the news that they're going to do a sequel to this, to Mary Poppins now, right?
You know, I'm a little I don't know about that.
A little iffy about
no Waltz, no Sherman Brothers to write the... your sequels have a way of not being... I said, tell them Bert's dead.
is that why they cast Lin-Manuel Miranda? He's a street lamp lighter. He's not a chimney sweep.
Oh, is that what he is?
Maybe that's why they did that. They didn't want to...
Is it going to be a musical?
I think that's what I heard.
I'm wondering.
Lin-Manuel and Emily Blunt is going to take Mary.
You can't match the Sherman Brothers. Every song they wrote was one you'll remember.
Yeah, and I don't think you can match Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke either for the magic and... What made that so magical?
I've had all my leading ladies, I've lucked out. Wonderful. Mary Tyler Moore and Julie Andrews. everybody's just been a doll. I've never had to put up with one of those divas.
And that was Dick Van Dyke and Dean Richards here at WGN, one of Dean Richards' A-list interviews from 2016. We'll be back right after this message. Chitty chitty bang bang, we love you. And oh, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang loves us too.
Near, far,
everywhere we go,
what a happy time we'll spend.
Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, our fine far-fendered friend. Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, our fang far-fendered friend.
Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang.
Oh God, did I love Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Oh, I was born in 1964, and so I'm not sure exactly when the movie came out, but in the late 60s and early 70s, there was a British company called Corgi. And they made a series of cars that were based on famous movies and TV shows. And they were made of metal. They were beautifully constructed cars. And they were great replicas. And they were toys. Now, today they would be collector's items. You wouldn't even open them. You wouldn't even play with them at all. But I was a little kid, so I played with them back then. And I've got a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and it's got the little people in it, and you hit a little lever and the wings come out so it can fly. Oh, and about 10 years or so ago, I was in London and I saw a theatrical version of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I don't think it ever came to the United States. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is huge in England because that's where it was, the story is based. And few people know it was written by the same author who wrote the James Bond films. Ian Fleming wrote Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. But they did a theatrical version, and they actually had the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car flying on the stage. Oh, it was so cool. And, of course, a star of that is Dick Van Dyke. And continue to play some of Dean Richards' favorite A-list celebrity interviews, we will continue now with part two of his Dick Van Dyke interview. So please stay tuned and listen to Dean and Dick. I just want to mention that I am not Dean Richards, if you didn't tell in the difference of voices. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dean today, and I'll be on until 1 o'clock, so I hope you stick around. But as I said, we had part one of the interview in the last half hour or so, so we thought we'd play part two of Dean talking to TV legend Dick Van Dyke.
A couple of times that you've been in Chicago, we've had you at WGN.
Oh.
You've done some stuff.
I think in late, but...
That's, I never expect anybody to remember after as many interviews as you must have done through the years, and as many times as you must have talked about the classic Dick Van Dyke show, but it's still amazing to me how it holds up and how timeless it is.
Carl Reiner, just brilliant. At the very outset, he said, I don't care how silly you get, as long as it's credible, as long as there's a reason it happened. You don't want any funny stuff for no reason. So he kept it credible, kept everybody believable. And of course, the greatest cast that was ever put together. It was part of Maury Amson used to say it's like going to a party every morning.
Yeah.
We rewrote all week, did a lot of improv. And it was just, I'd still be doing it if they let me.
Yeah.
I miss it.
You wanted to continue, didn't you?
Oh, I never wanted to.
You didn't
nobody
want
wanted
to stop. It's CBS that wanted to stop.
Well,
and then
Carl,
they tried to blame it on you, didn't they? That's what I read in your book. They're trying to blame it on you, and you didn't want to stop.
No, Carl said at the beginning, 5 years would be it. He felt that you got repetitive after that. But look at shows that ran 11 years. And we could have gone on. The first year he wrote all 39 episodes by himself.
Wow.
Incredible. He's 93 now. Still got all his marbles and is still writing.
Yeah, I follow him on Twitter. I don't know.
Oh, do you?
Are you on social media?
Oh, sure.
At all? Because I see the things that I think are you, but I follow Carl religiously.
Oh yeah, he spends a lot.
Because he puts on such great things and interesting things.
He was like a father to me. He was my mentor.
Yeah. Have you ever had that kind of chemistry again with cast with a group of people. That seems like lightning in a bottle.
We were like an improv group. Somebody could give us a subject and we could do it without a script. It was just one of those great moments when everything was fun to do. The most creative 5 years of my life.
I love, we have shown on our morning TV show on WGN videos of you and your wife. And it was a bluegrass band. I don't recall the name of the band.
But the Dust Bowl Revival.
We've had them on the show.
The Dust Bowl Revival. Aren't they great?
We've had them. They're so fantastic.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything that we like more than watching you dancing around.
They came out to the house.
They came out to your house. You were dancing. You still have your moves. You haven't slowed down a bit, it doesn't seem like.
Fred Astaire, when he was in his 80s, I said, can you still dance? He said, yeah, but it hurts now.
Yeah.
I said, I know what you mean.
Is that what you're experiencing? But you really seem to love it and enjoy keeping very active. We see you in videos with these flash mobs where you've done Let's Go Fly a Kite and some of the outdoor things. You really still seem to love
it. I have a quartet, three guys half my age. And we do all the things from, pop and stuff. But we dance and everything. We're going to appear at the Tivoli in Chicago.
In Downers Grove.
When we're there.
Right, right.
I can't wait. We're going to sing the Danville High School fight song. They don't think we know it. We're going to do it.
Can you give us a little preview of that right now?
There's a fight. Danville, fight for Danville High. Spread fame and honor far and near. Fight, fight. Cheer with all your might. Cheer the team without a fight, without a might. So fight for the old Marine and white. We're always loyal to you. Fight, fight, cheer with all you might to HSBA Bertrude. I'm going to sing that one with the quartet.
That's fantastic.
And we'll get everybody to join
in.
I want to surprise them with that one.
I'm just going to ask you one more thing. What you think of comedy today? So many, I interview so many people who say how much they have patterned their careers after you. They look to you. They have tried to, base their careers on you. You've been a big inspiration, too.
Man, I stole from Stan Laurel and Buster Keaton. I'm just passing it on.
What do you think of comedy today and, some of the people who are carrying the torch today? You're not.
I just say I don't get it. I don't say it's not funny. I don't get it. There's so much canned laughter. I hear canned laughter from our old show that they sold. honest to God.
Wow.
They're only 20 minutes long now. They used to be 28 minutes.
Yeah.
So they have to get the story told. But nothing disturbs me like seeing somebody trying too hard to be funny. Do you know who Paul Dooley is? The character actor? He was in a million movies.
Yeah.
One of those people who does effortless comedy.
Mm-hmm.
He just did a one-man show, which I went to see. Wonderful. He's probably 85, but one of the real masters of comedy. You don't catch him at it,
Yeah. Is there anybody that you like right now? Anybody that I've interviewed the cast of Everybody Loves Raymond many times.
Yeah,
Phil Rosenthal,
the tall guy is
Brad Garrett.
Good stand-up.
And
of course, so is Raymond.
Yeah,
so is Raymond.
But they based Phil Rosenthal, the producer of that show, has told me they completely based everything on that show on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
No kidding.
Real situations, real things that the writers would bring in. That the producers would bring in, that there were episodes where things that were happening in their own lives. It sounds
That's
like what you guys did.
An awful lot of our shows were based on things that happened to it.
Yeah.
I miss it. But I've done a couple of guest shots on sitcoms, and they're just deadly. Everybody just sits around waiting for their next shot. I mean, it was a party. We clowned forever.
Yeah.
We always came up with more material than we could use.
Right.
Somebody has a book called SOS, Some Other Show, of all the ideas we had that we never used.
Yeah. Well, it's, I can still watch it, and I think everybody feels the same way. You can still watch it, even though we've seen them 1,000 times, and laugh our heads off.
Isn't that great?
Because of what you guys created. You still remember the words of the theme song, don't you? We know the
Maury
instrumental.
Maury Damsnam wrote them.
Yeah.
He never published them. As far as I know, he never licensed them. But I have the quartet singing, just because it's cute.
Could I get just a little preview?
I'm a little hoarse this morning. Said, so you think that you've got trouble? Well, trouble's a bubble. So tell old Mr. Trouble to get lost. Why not hold your head up high and stop crying, start trying, and don't forget to keep your fingers crossed. When you find the joy of living, is loving and giving. You'll be there when the winning dice are tossed. A smile is just a frown that's turned upside down. So smile on that frown or defrost. And don't forget to keep your fingers crossed. I don't fall down anymore.
Thank you. Thank
it's a pleasure.
You so much.
Thank you.
You are just the greatest.
Dean Richards with Dick Van Dyke. And, boy, couldn't you just hear in Dean's voice how both in awe and how genuinely excited he was to be talking with Dick Van Dyke. That's, to me, always a great thing. I've been fortunate enough to interview many of my idols and meet many of my boyhood and adult idols, whether it was from entertainment or sports and things like that. And I'll tell you, when you actually look eye to eye with somebody who you have watched on TV or whose music you've listened to or whose movies you have watched or things like that, and when you look at them eye to eye in person and they're reacting to you, it really is it's almost surreal. I was filling in the afternoon drive here on Friday, and I had Blackhawks legend Tony Esposito on the phone, and I was a huge Tony Esposito fan when I was growing up, and I remain a huge admirer of Tony Esposito, and he really taught me a lot just watching him play about sportsmanship and how to go about you know, when you perform, how to do it, to give your all, but also have a little bit of humility. And you know, I've met him on several occasions, and I actually got a Christmas card from Tony Esposito and his family this year. And believe me, when I opened that card up, I almost had to sit down. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I said to him, even on the phone call, I wish my mom was alive for many reasons, obviously, but she knew what a great fan I was of Tony Esposito. I even took my confirmation name after Tony Esposito, Anthony. And my gosh, I would have loved to have shown her this Christmas card from Tony Esposito and his family, but it really is a great kind of experience. And you could hear, I could hear at least, in Dean's voice when he was interviewing Dick Van Dyke there, it was clearly that this was someone who Dean was highly, highly taken with and admired very much, and he wound up getting a great interview. One of the great A-list interviews by Dean Richards in 2016, and I'm sure 2017 will be filled with a lot more A-list interviews that you will be hearing right here on WGN as part of the Dean Richards Show. Great year for Dean, and he also did some great work, including many of his A-list interviews. We're going to play one now. We've been sprinkling the show. We played one with Clint Eastwood, and we played one, a two-parter, with Dick Van Dyke. And now we're going to go to the world of theater and play one by the creator, writer, star of the Broadway sensation, and now playing here in Chicago in its first touring production, Hamilton, the actor, writer, and just all-round, you know, talented guy, especially right now, Lin-Manuel Miranda. So here he is talking to Dean.
It's a super special treat for Chicago to have Lin-Manuel Miranda here in the city, the Chicago with the Hamilton fever, with another block of tickets that are just announced this morning, going on sale next Tuesday. You've got this city, you know, like in your fingers right now. It's amazing.
I feel like Ferris Bueller. It's really wonderful. Thank you.
That's a perfect comparison. How exciting is it for you to be taking the show to another city? How did you choose Chicago and kind of handing off your baby to a new cast?
Well, it's not a baby. It's all grown up and going to college. That's how I think of Chicago. But it's extraordinary. You know, Chicago was always going to be the next stop. It's the best theater town in the United States, full stop. The way you support theater, the way the caliber of talent that comes out of Chicago. Thank you for Jesse Mueller. We're never giving her back. It was always going to be our next stop because it's such an incredible town for theater.
What's the wildest thing that's happened to you in this whole ride? I mean, there still must be days where you're pinching yourself with everything that's happened to you. What? Pulitzer Prize, a couple of Grammys, right?
Yeah.
Emmy Award, 3 Tonys for you, 11 for the show, the MacArthur Genius Award.
Well, when you list it like that, I feel very tired.
Amazing. What's the most amazing thing that's happened?
Honestly, what's amazing is actually getting to go into the theater and put the thing up. You know, I watched a run-through yesterday. And you know, my past and my present sort of converge on that stage. You've got these incredible newcomers, not newcomers to you, like Jose Ramos, who's playing John Lawrence, who's a Chicago native. But then you also have Karen Olivo, who was in my first romantic lead in In the Heights in 2008, who is so unbelievable as Angelica, you guys. And Josh Henry, who got his Broadway debut in the Heights, who's an extraordinary Burr, with this company of kids that it really took us a year to cast. So making the thing is always the highlight.
But just, you know, becoming one of the most familiar faces in the world, really.
Well, that's weird.
Know, being instant celebrity like that. Is it great? Are there downsides to it?
The joy of it is, you know, getting a restaurant reservation. The downside of it is, you know, you're never really sort of privately with your thoughts on the street. I mean, that's sort of the weird thing. That's an adjustment. Cutting my hair helped. Shaving helps. But it's, you know, I'm a writer. So
because you look so different now, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I look like myself and not Hamilton anymore. Yeah. I really grew my hair out for it.
Yeah.
But it's... for me, the joy of participating in the world is getting to kind of observe it. So it's weird when the thing you're observing kind of looks back at you. It's like Inception.
Yeah. I mean, talking about this, you know, celebrity, Mr. Coverboy, GQ Magazine.
They kind of she's all that at me.
Yeah.
Right? They took my glasses off and took my hair down.
You are like Mr. Preppy Man.
Well, they dressed me. What was fun is that the look of the shoot was sort of salsa star. It was like Fania All Star. So I got to wear all this like fun kind of jewelry I would never wear in real life, and you know, wear these sort of vintage 70s sweaters. I felt like Hector Lavoe, and that was really awesome.
I had just got done reading, you know, more about your background, you know, and really kind of like a simple and unassuming person. And then I look at the GQ, and here's a $4,000 suit and $800
shoes. They rip that off you the second they're done with the suit.
You didn't get to keep that?
No, I didn't get to keep any of that clothes. Right. It was a lot of fun.
I saw on Twitter last night that you got to enjoy Rick Bayless's Topolobampo last night. You said that this is not the first time that you've been there. There's kind of a good story.
That's right, yeah. For Mother's Day several years ago, I sort of outdid myself. I took my mom to one of the last tapings of Oprah when she was taping the ABC show, and then took her to dinner at Topolobampo. Rick Bayless is her favorite chef. Yeah. Like, she's a Top Chef junkie. So we did Oprah and then Topolobampo, and it was so amazing. So, you know, the first opportunity, I went back.
One of the most moving things that I've ever seen, literally spontaneous tears from me, was your acceptance speech at the Tonys. With the love is speech that you gave. What inspired that? What brought that? I mean, it was the day of the Orlando shootings.
Yes.
It was a very emotionally raw day that you somehow turned into something positive.
Well, it was a very hard day. You know, I didn't learn about the tragedy until after we'd finished rehearsal, and it felt so sort of cruel to be surrounded by the theater community, which is the most accepting and diverse community I've ever known, in the wake of that tragedy that seemed to take aim at diversity, at love. I just tried to meet the moment as honestly as possible, and that was sort of all I was trying to do, is try to wrap my head around something you can't wrap your head around.
Yeah. Another way that you're giving, I mean, not only is the show so enormously entertaining, but is moving people in a way that I wondered if you had anticipated when you wrote it, how it would empower people, how it would make people look at the stage and go, I could do anything. I could be anyone. It's changed people.
Well, that's really thrilling. That's really kind of you to say. I mean, I knew history teachers would like it, because we kind of cover a semester of AP US history in 2 hours and 45 minutes. I could not have anticipated... you know, the effect the show has on people is really the effect reading Ron's biography had on me, which was, how did this person survive these unendurable circumstances and go on to do so much within his short life? And I think people leave the theater feeling that way. They leave like, what am I doing with my life? Am I making the days I have, none of which are promised, count?
We're excited that you're going to be starring with Emily Blunt in, I don't want to call it a remake of Mary Poppins.
No, but it's a full-on sequel. I mean, Jane and Michael Banks are grown up. And Mary Poppins comes back to take care of their kids.
Have you started filming? I mean, what can you tell us
about that? No, I moved to London pretty soon, and we start rehearsals, and then we'll be shooting most of next year. So I am the guy who wrote a musical about how much he doesn't want to leave Washington Heights, New York, is going to be living in London most of the next year. So I'm a little nervous, but I'm really excited.
It's got to be exciting to, you know, kind of step into those shoes of such one of the most classic musicals of all time.
Yeah, I showed my son that movie for the first time. He's just about to turn 2. And when the music started, he gasped. And that's the effect Mary Poppins still has on me. That music starts and you see the roofs of London and you gasp.
Do you still have your freestyling chops from, you know, back in the day where, you know, you would be able to just freestyle something?
I think I got some game.
Because here's what we've got going on here, Lynn. I'm sure you know that our Chicago Cubs are in the playoffs. That doesn't happen, you know, very often. Can you bring some of that Hamilton mojo
to our
Chicago Cubs?
I have a condition. You know this, right?
I know you're a New Yorker.
No, not that. It's if a reporter asks me to freestyle, they have to provide the beatbox.
Okay, you got that. What do you need?
Yeah.
Don't leave me hanging with this.
No, you got to give me a beat. There you go. We're live, and he's beatboxing. Oh, my gosh. And I'm going to try to rock sing. Yeah, try to win it for the cubbies. All of the wives, please hug all of your hubbies. Yeah, I know what it means. I have a good friend. His name is Mr. Sam Levine, and he is screaming for you all to win. But I root for the Yankees because I'm a New Yorker and I'm Lynn.
There you go.
Well, I don't know if that song would have won a Tony, but the other one sure did, 11 to be exact, for Hamilton and Lin-Manuel Miranda. And that is one of Dean Richards' A-list celebrity interviews from 2016. Oh, I know it's only January and it's cold, but when you hear Randy Newman's soundtrack to The Natural, you just think of Wonder Boy and Robert Redford batting lefty and kind of just up at the plate and literally knocking the cover off the ball. Don't you love that scene in The Natural? Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards today, and throughout the show, we have been playing some of Dean's favorite and best A-list celebrity interviews, and throughout the show, we've had Dean speaking with Clint Eastwood, with Dick Van Dyke, and with Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton, and now we're going to play the last one of the show. He's talked to Butch Cassidy, he talked to one of the con men from The Sting, talk to Roy Hobbs, you name it. It is Mr. Robert Redford talking to Dean Richards.
Let's talk about your love for Chicago for a minute. You've fallen in love with our city, haven't you?
I do love it. I've loved it for a long, long time. But I've made a couple of films there. But aside from that, I just like the city and its people. I have much of my adult life. You know, just something about it. It's... In many ways, it's the best of America. You know, New York City's great for what it's about. It's more diverse culturally and, you know, has more European influence. And L.A.'s was once a good city. I don't know whatever happened to it. But Chicago's just, it's right in the center.
Yeah. You know? I know you're involved with the mayors, I think. Both of them were for environmental and green issues.
Yes.
And then you made the documentary that really dug into Chicago. I mean, your commitment is really, like, deal.
That was my affection for Chicago. I think that's what that was about.
We need you to come back and do another documentary to look at some of our other problems that we've got going on now.
Well, we all have problems.
So in Pete's Dragon, some of the scenes where you're doing woodworking and this very rustic life that we see that you're in, I'm wondering how close that is to how you may live now.
It's pretty close.
In certain places, is it really? It's pretty rustic.
Yeah, I'm not a wood carver, but I used to like to mess around with wood and so forth and rock and just play with that, like sculpting. the fact that it's in a what was appealing to me is that it's right on the edge of a very rural situation, which had a lot of mystery in it. You know, the forest. A lot of people don't know what's in the forest and are afraid to go in because they don't know. My character is a character that feels like he does know. He tells stories about it that no one believes, but they like to hear it anyway. He's a really good character.
It's a great character. The fantasy aspect of this, of, you know, whether you were a kid that had an encounter with the dragon at one point, or,
oh, don't I wish,
you know, a guy just telling tall tales, as we, you know, we do to kids every once in a while. It's
like
really kind of lovely,
tales.
Really.
I'm sorry?
It's kind of lovely. So much that's implied is so lovely.
Yeah, I think so. And I think tall tales are not a bad thing when you're a kid, you know, because you're little and you see the world differently, and you're looking for an opening that tells you what's a bigger world that's out there. And I think stories for children gave you that, you know, fantasy stories, fairy tales, and so forth. It meant a lot to me when I was a kid, because I grew up in a very tight, small, working-class neighborhood where there wasn't much available entertainment-wise, so the radio meant a lot, and you hear these stories. Or you go to the library, and you go in and read these stories about a life larger than yours, and it gave you some kind of hope. So I'm all for that.
Yeah, really engage the imagination, I guess. That's a little bit of what this did. It really engages your imagination in a way films
well, nothing wrong with
don't
that.
Very much anymore. That's very true. Yeah. It was Bryce Dallas Howard who said in an interview that, you know, working with Robert Redford was a little awe-struck to her in the beginning. And she said that you wound up being the coolest guy and also a badass at the same time, which I think is kind of a great... Who wouldn't want that as a description of himself?
It depends what badass means to some people.
What do you think? How would you describe yourself?
Badass is right. I can live with that one, yeah.
Yeah.
That goes all the way back to childhood.
Really?
Yeah.
Like mischievous, you mean, or...
In trouble, in and out of trouble. Fortunately, I survived it, but I mean, yeah. Did some things I'm not proud of.
Yeah.
But they were sure fun.
Yeah. Maybe that's what makes you the coolest guy in the world.
I don't know about cool.
Yeah. we're reading so much that you and Jane Fonda are going to be working on a project again together. Is that correct?
If she can slow down enough to do it, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I love Jane. We've done films. We started actually in 1965, a film called The Chase that Arthur Penn directed. And then after that, it was Barefoot in the Park. And then 10 years after that, it was The Electric Horseman. So if you cover about 40 years' time, she and I have made films over that time together. And it's always been a pleasure for me, you know, to work with her.
And that's Robert Redford, one of Dean Richards' A-list celebrity interviews in 2016. And naturally, there will be more to come in 2017.